Hello and welcome to another episode of Rethink Possible, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Rethink Possible explores pockets of awesomeness taking place in school districts as told by school district leaders. I'm Bob McDowell, your host. Let's dig in. Today, I have the pleasure of talking with Dr. Noel Schmidt, who is the superintendent of Rock Ridge Public Schools up in the northern part of the state of Minnesota. Thanks for being with me today, Noel.
Well, absolutely. Thanks, Dr. McDowell. Very happy to be with you here today.
And maybe to start with, it'd be good for people to hear a little bit about you and what is Rock Ridge Public Schools? Where is it? Because it's a little unique in that it is really way up in the northern part of the state.
It is. We would be considered a rural district, but what's different here is that I'm in the heart of mining country up here. So if you go to Canada, you've gone too far, but we're just south of the Canadian border. So, but we would absolutely probably have right now about 2,400 kids in our district, and we are the result of a merged consolidated district where the old Eveleth Gilbert had maybe 800 students and the old Virginia had maybe about 1,700. So that's geographically where we are.
All right. Well, and for people that are tuning in now, the reason that I wanted to talk with you, you and I have talked a little bit about a really large referendum that you passed and some significant changes as a result of that. And I think that would be an interesting piece of information for superintendents and even those thinking about becoming superintendents to hear about how'd you do it? How did this work and what were the steps to it?
It's probably one of the most interesting education stories that most people in Minnesota have never heard of just because of geographically where we're at. But what happened is we had two ancient rival districts. And this is since the 1900s. These districts have been around a long time. And so when I first got up here, the nicest thing somebody said to me was, well, Schmidt, good luck with that. And so it took about 3 years to get the voters to be thinking about the benefits of consolidation. And the whole key to it was that we focus on kids, the future of kids, what buildings do kids need, what academically do they need, and that was the key to everything. Because as soon as we started talking about kids and grandkids and the education they needed, that changed the script. So we never actually started talking about buildings, even though it did result in the creation of three brand new buildings, a new high school, two new elementary schools. And one thing that folks who are listening to this need to realize is we have had old buildings up here. It's been a massive undertaking. These buildings are 100 years old and they have everything you don't want. We had lead in the pipes. We had failing systems. We had boilers decades, decades old that were barely cobbling together. We couldn't regulate temperature. And they were old traditional classrooms, not set up for project-based learning or anything like that, which we shifted into. So we're a project-based learning school district right now. So we went through a big process to evaluate facilities. And during a period of 18 months, I was in four public elections and every single one of them passed. Because to do all this, we had to pass the vote in Eveleth Gilbert and in Virginia. So I tried doing that one, having two completely separate districts on the exact same day pass several times because they had to vote to approve the bonds, and then they had to vote in a completely different election to whether they should consolidate or not, because first they were simply agreeing to build cooperative facilities. So it's probably one of the most interesting elections I've ever been involved in. It was just crazy.
So that's interesting. How did you go about tooling up both of those different communities? Did it look the same process-wise, or was there some differences based on the culture, the context of each community?
Each community was different, and fortunately at the time, Eveleth Gilbert had a superintendent named Jeff Carey, who was willing to work, willing to bury the old war axe and talk about what kids need. And so we worked together on making this happen. But it's an interesting case, Bob. How do you pass major bond things when you're not in charge of the other district?
Right.
And so it ended up being a cooperative effort, because what also made it more interesting up here or not is that we had a very vocal no group. Mm. You know how you go to these workshops and you read all these things about the negative people? They're going to do this. They're going to phone call. They're going to make stuff up. They're going to print flyers. They're going to make accusations. All of that happened up here. Mm. And so we also had to deal with a very negative group at the same time. But we were very successful because we didn't let them pancake us. Whenever they would print a flyer that had incorrect information, we would print the accurate information, because we can do that. We can print accurate information, and we did it aggressively. So people didn't believe some of the things that the negative people were literally making up and pulling out of thin air. So we had to refute them, and we did that through a number of different ways, but we ran Q&As in the paper all the time. Because up here, it's an older population, and they still read the paper, and they still read the flyers and all that, and we use social media also. But that was a little bit what made it a little different. In fact, and I can say this right now, this is how exciting things have been up here. We currently have a school board member suing the rest of the school board.
Wow.
And this is all a hangover from all of this stuff, because things are happening up here that some people don't like. So, but it's been great for the kids.
So considering that a lot of the people listening to this are probably sitting superintendents, and you've opened up a ton of thoughts going through my mind right now, but one is, knowing what you know now, what was your plan of attack? You sitting in the superintendent chair, knowing all that you know about what people have told you, how did you go about developing that plan of attack over the length of time, knowing what you wanted the means to the end to be?
That's actually a really good question, because it boiled down to two things. One is that, and this is common in some communities, is that sometimes you only know what you know. You only know what's within your geographic area. And so one thing we did, we talked heavily about what do we want our kids to know, be able to do. So one thing we did is we put kids on a bus. We sent parents all over the place. We were in four different states. We probably visited 15 different school districts. Mm. And we looked through and we talked curriculum. We looked at buildings, because we wanted our people to have an idea about what else was out there. And so that was absolutely key. Now, of course, we did get some flack for sending people to other states. But I'm going, you know, we just passed a $178 million bond. Shouldn't we be smart and spend a few thousand dollars sending people to see some exemplars, see the best of the best? And in addition to that, we also sent people to ordinary schools, construction-wise, so they could see what they look like. Because there are some buildings that have been built fairly recently that look as though they were built in 1980. And so they also took a look at those, and our folks said they didn't want it. But the huge driver in all of this was changing education for our kids. So we did shift to a career academy. We have that running full bore up here. We have a school business coordinator. And the high school has made a complete shift. We're doing project-based learning. We're doing the project-based learning in the elementary. So the two big drivers are, one, focus on the kids' need. Don't talk about buildings first.
Mm-hmm.
And only after you've determined what you want to do educationally, then you evaluate your buildings and you say, can we do this in our current buildings? It's going to be yes or no. And then based upon what that answer is, then you move forward from there. But another thing we did was, this is a subset, we got the right people on the bus. So we had the right movers and shakers. We knew who people listened to, and we made sure that they were aware, and a lot of them went and visited other schools, and that made a huge, huge difference. So we went way beyond the school board and the admin team to get people so they were aware of what their options were.
great segue, because my next question is around your admin team and the building admin teams and staff. So to this point, you describe the outside of the four walls of the school, and how did you then bring along, prepare, discuss, work with your leadership team, work with the teachers in order to have them make decisions and be a part of that process?
That's another really good question, because one thing we did not have to fight was the teacher group. They wanted these buildings because they wanted more windows, they wanted more light, they wanted modern stuff, but they also were really wanted the Career Academy project-based learning. And it's, that was really apparent to them when they toured other schools. And we toured some other schools that were not Career Academy, that were not project-based necessarily. We went to some IB schools, for example, and some other ones. We saw some Avid programs. We do Avid. But the biggest driver in all of this for us was the teacher group helped a lot, but we brought them in early. They knew exactly what was going on. We had large teacher groups that were talking about all sorts of different things. They were key partners from the very get-go. One of the first meetings I had was sitting down with the union president at that time and the other people and saying, well, here's where we are. Here's where this train might be going. What do you think? And is there any way you can help?
Mm-hmm. So then I'm assuming part of that process, if we stay focused on the learning piece, right, is that there were most likely some significant process changes, some significant curriculum changes that took place as a result of this. Can you talk a little bit about what that looked like?
Yeah, because that was kind of the deal that sealed everything for the average typical person up here, which, and they exist everywhere, the average typical person. The what from that point of view, the first big one was the Career Academy. So all of our kids, 9-12, it's really 7-12, we have set up Career Academies. There's three of them, and we do send people into different academies, whichever one they want. But what's different here is that we went lower than the ninth grade. Typically, these start in the ninth grade. And so we start in the upper elementary. So in the upper elementary, our kids go through the Meteor program, which is a hands-on experiential way for kids to start thinking about how they learn. And then that morphs into, we continue that in the seventh, eighth grade, the Meteor program, but we also introduce Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, because we realize if we're sending kids out in internships, externships, we're sending them to business, or they're interacting with business people, we want them acting their best. We want them behaving decently. This is all those social skills we want them to have. So our seventh and eighth graders go through the Covey 7 Habits. And then in the ninth grade, they start the heavier specifically on academies. We have a course everyone takes. Kids will select an academy. Now they can bounce around and shift. That's pretty common now in career academies. And it's been a big hit up here, big winner, because the business people in the community, boy, I've never seen anything where the community gets on board so much, because I constantly hear, we should have done this years ago. Why wouldn't we do that? And so what we did made sense to the people who are living here. We didn't try and bring in some program from some other place. We made sure it was homegrown and it made sense to the folks here. And after they had decided that, then they were ready to go to the polls and vote.
So then what do the partnerships look like? Now that this is up and running, what are the community partnerships and how do you keep those going?
Probably the best one. We do have a school business coordinator, and that's critical. You have to have one. So if you're thinking about doing a career academy, don't do it without someone to coordinate this between businesses. It's got to be a new person. It can't be an assistant principal or principal with other duties if you really want this to work. But the biggest example I can use, Dr. McDowell, is Healthcare. Healthcare is a big field everywhere. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's a main driver of jobs, no matter what where you're looking at. And so we've talked to all of our healthcare providers in the area. Then we made a deal with Orthopedics Associates, and they are renting part of our school, and it's right across the parking lot from the high school. There's no road. It's just a parking lot. And so our kids who are in the healthcare academy, they can go across the parking lot. They can go into the clinic, and it's a real full-bore clinic. They can talk to an orthopedic. They can talk to a surgeon. They can talk to RNs. They can talk to LPNs. They can talk to coders. They can talk to people doing the accounting, the books. They can talk to PT, OT people and find out what it's really, really like, because what we discovered, and parents will kind of pick up on this because I see heads nodding all the time, a lot of our kids are making decisions about where they're going to college based on myth, rumor, or something they think is true. So if a kid wants to go in the healthcare field, shouldn't they actually talk to someone who's actually working in the field? Mm-hmm. So that's probably the best example we've got of a full-bore partnership that's going on right now.
Sure. I think one of the things we haven't touched on in some of these podcasts so much is this idea of after you make a significant change, whatever that is, what does it look like to sustain the change? What's that cycle of sustainment? Because it's a lot of work in this case to bring two communities together, to pass a referendum, to build new buildings, to put in new curriculum. But it's not done when that's implemented. There's a sustainment process. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that looks like in your day-to-day world now that you've got all this change that's been put into place.
So I've been here 9 years. I can absolutely see why superintendents don't do this because it is more work, because the variables don't change. And I kind of say everything was hard, everything was easy. It's like doing the Texas two-step or doing a dance step, one step forward, one back, two to the left, two to the right, two forward, one back. Because keep in mind, every possible system was under change here. Mm-hmm. Not only the curriculum, not only the buildings, but we also had issues with sports. And let me say this, we have not had a single issue with kids in two different communities coming together. They love it. We have great fields. We have all turf fields. Mm-hmm. We have some, these fields are outstanding, and our building, both two buildings have won major architect awards. Yeah. And we think that third one's going to also win one coming up. But everything is difficult, and it never stops. So because we still deal with individuals who are certain that somebody is getting a better deal over somebody else. Mm-hmm. I deal with three different city councils, and I've been to each one at some various point. They all think somebody's getting taken advantage of, or some other district school, they're doing something building wise. And what's made that, this may help have your viewers understand or listeners understand what I'm talking about. We've also demolished an incredible amount of buildings because these are old buildings that nobody wants. We tried to sell them. Nobody wants them. We're in a non-growing part of the state of Minnesota. So we've demolished the equivalent of 530 single-family homes, or the equivalent of 53 city blocks. Wow. And that brings a whole another round of emotions with them because people have memories in these buildings, etc. And we're merging. We had to merge all the contracts, teacher contracts. Try and do that one, superintendents. That one's a lot of fun. You can get through it. Everything just takes longer, but you have to go through it. Job descriptions have to change. People are now working with different people. Now the teacher's got different people in their department. Like, who is this person? I don't know. They were in the other school district. So now they got to merge curriculum together. It's hard, but we kept going through it, and you take it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. And no problem.
So along those lines then, what have you set up as any type of metrics to know that you're successful at any of this, at all of it? What does it look like to make decisions and say, yeah, okay, this actually was a good decision. This actually is going the way we want it to go. What does that look like?
So that happened two ways. The first way it looked like was at the very beginning, we had community meetings up the wazoo. I've been at over 150 community meetings everywhere, church basements, everywhere else. You cannot repeat your story enough. If you think you're going to do this on four meetings, you're wrong, and you deserve everything you're going to get when the voters go to the polls, because it's not going to pass. The second thing we've done is we have a new strategic plan. And unfortunately, because ours is too big, and we know that, but we had a new district, so many systems were merging together. It's kind of like, it's as simple as who's going to hook up the smart board. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What is it from that district, this district? And, but it's how's the technology going to play out, which is the bigger question. So we have a strategic plan. We set it up using the Franklin Covey's 40X method, from X to Y by when, and it's worked really well. So we follow that as it's our Bible, our blueprint. And so we keep following that, and we set it up as a rubric. So rather than saying we're going to achieve this by 2026, I mean, who knows? How do you know you're going to get something done by 2026? It's just a wild guess. So we have a rubric so we can see it going from we're not doing anything to all the way to proficient, and then we can measure where we're going on the rubric. And so that's how we're tracking how we're making progress up here.
Perfect. Well, the last question that I ask people is looking at if you were going to do this again, or if you were in front of a bunch of superintendents that were saying, okay, now that you've done this, Noel, what should I consider? What are the top one, two, three takeaways if someone were to, and I suppose in your case, answer one or both of the questions, the referendum question, moving to a career in tech as a part of that, and buildings and consolidating schools. But given the complexity of what you've had, what would you say to superintendents that are faced with significant change like this? Are the top one, two, or three things to pay attention to or to do?
I've got two. The first one would be to go slow to go fast. And the other thing would be to, you got to work, get around the negative people. Because I'll talk about the going around the negative people. We had a strong cluster here. They're still here. And so, but what, and I heard this right away when I came up here. It's like, that's never going to happen. No way is that going to happen. No way are people going to do this. I heard this constantly. But once you get past the negative group, because I was wondering, what does the average typical person really think? And so you have to have strategies to get around and find out what the average typical person thinks, because they're not talking. They're not as boisterous and as loud as the negative people. So you have to do a whole bunch of things to find out what they're really talking. So we did paper and pencil surveys. We sent to every single resident. And it cost us a lot of money, but we found out what people really thought, not what just the angry people thought. Who didn't want XYZ, whatever it is. So that's the first thing. Find out what the real people are talking about. And to that end, for example, we had 40 meetings, and this is in line with go slow to go fast. We had 40 public meetings all over the place. And the only question we asked was, so what do you think about Eblith, Gilbert, and Virginia doing something together? That's it. We didn't ask any other question for 40 meetings, because we just wanted to find out what did people think about the two districts doing anything together. And then we found out they were interested. They didn't really know what. And then we had another series of meetings and another series of meetings. So those are my two big walkaways. Go slow to go fast, because then we could go fast later on, because we knew the public was there with us and what they wanted. And then the other thing, have good sound strategies to find out what the average typical person really is thinking. And don't believe the cacophony of negative people you're hearing. They probably don't represent your area.
Perfect. Well, I can't thank you enough for the time today. I've been talking here with Dr. Noel Schmidt, who is the superintendent of Rock Ridge Public Schools. Thank you so much for being with me, Noel.
Hey, thanks, Dr. McDowell.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Rethink Possible with Bob McDowell, a joint effort between CISO, the Center for Effective School Operations, and MASA, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.